We used to have 50 on staff here. 50. I'm the only one left. All comes down to one schmuck, me. The night shift bellhop. What the hell is a bellhop? Huh? What is he? You know where the name comes from? Huh? It's just so simple and stupid. Some schmuck rings a bell and you hop.
I'll make one myself. You. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. Come on in and set a spell while we do another Film Sack, the podcast of Mind the Very Depths of Film Entertainment for All Mankind. That's the one. Episode 100.
Do you know what we do here? Do you even know?
I'm not sure anymore. Episode 179, by the way. Welcome back, everybody. Wow. My name is Scott Johnson. Joining me, Brian, the missing ingredient, Dunaway.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Hello? Hello? Oh, hey, Mom. No, this is a good time. I just started watching a movie for this week's Film Sack. Yeah, that's the one with Scott, Brian, and Randy. What's that, the title of the movie? Something about rooms. I don't know. I added it to my instant queue last week. I think it might either be a Pink Panther movie or a sequel to Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Right.
PG, Mr. Herman.
Yeah. At any rate, how's Dad? Holy jumped up, ball-headed Jesus Palomino, Mom. I think Paul Rubens is about to have sex in a porcelain tub full of bodily fluids. Dang you, Scott, Brian, and Randy.
Yeah. Boy, the Pee-wee reference is pretty solid. I haven't considered it until now. That's pretty good. Also with us, Randy, are you going to let Banderas blow smoke in your face like that, Jordan?
Aloha, Brian, Scott.
Now listen, I'm leaving right now, and nobody better call me unless there's been a murder, or there's a fire, or Scott starts telling the blanket over the TV story again. Besides, neither of the Bryans can even see this Skype call with all the KY on their eyelids. Gross, dude.
Well, I kind of went in the same direction.
Wow. Yeah. It's like I saw a body and I want to throw up as I yell. Also, and finally, Brian Click Finger Cash Ibbot.
Hello, guys. So I'm working on a remake of this film, you know, with a bunch of different directors. Oh, yeah. For the fourth one, we're actually going to get Joel Schumacher, Robin Williams, and Jim Carrey to call down to Ted the Bellhop and tell him he's being a little too over the top.
Right.
Zing, dude. Zing. Yeah.
Mr. Roth. Good performance.
Tim Roth really, the Pee-wee Herman thing is smacking me in the face.
I never even considered that
before.
That's kind of funny.
That whole bit, and then the kind of, I don't know, the manic nature in which most of his stuff is done is so...
Reminded me very much of two movies. Pee-wee's Big Adventure, because there was the bellhop thing, but it's over the top, kind of like that silly. And also... what was I going to say? The other thing that it reminded me of is, Clue. This is very Clue-esque.
Very Clue-y. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Clue with a word.
Let's just head that off, though, before we get any further. Clue is so much better than this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, yes.
And I'd say, I'm going to be the defender here for part of this movie, because I think you can't really judge this movie as a whole, because it is... four different parts. You know, it's four different directors, four different it's written as four different movies.
Right. So you're gonna pick the best one. We're all gonna pick our favorite part. Yeah. But you're gonna say the best one saves it, like makes it okay.
No. But I'm saying that if you were to take one segment of this
right.
on its own, it would be better than Clue was as a whole. But because because the other two, in my opinion, two segments bring this movie down. On the whole, this movie is worse than Clue.
Okay.
In my opinion, four segments bring this movie down.
Right.
And the only good part are the connecting pieces, the phone calls.
Right.
Those are pretty good. Those are all right. But here's the thing, though. So we can't go much further without actually saying which parts are our favorites. So let's get that out of the way. For me, the Tarantino one is the best one. And I admit that that whole gag, the entire thing, is one scene out of an entire Tarantino movie. Like, it's not a, it is not a standalone film. It is a piece of something he would have thrown away from Reservoir Dogs or Pulp Fiction. And I'm shocked, honestly, it didn't make it into one of those, because it fits right in and would have been a normal thing to see there.
Well,
but
it's just a remake of another thing that's been done so many times that I don't even understand. Like, how did Quentin Tarantino sign on to this?
It is you're right. It's like a knock knock joke that just has him doing dialogue on top of it. It's a skeleton. It's the skeletal remains of another story, and he puts skin on it. But all that being said, let's say it's the first time you've ever seen that kind of tropey thing that they did at the end. Mm-hmm. I think it's a pretty damn good version of that, because it has all these Tarantino things in it. It's got bare feet. I forget about that. Right.
Where are the bare feet?
It's what's-her-name walking around.
I know Jennifer Beals walking around in a robe, but do you even see her feet?
Well, he requires it on stage, saying, if you're going to film me in my movie.
Yeah, see? Who are you all? See? I say,
you dirty rat.
Okay, so that was the wrong affectation.
So the second part, the wrong man fulfills the Tarantino foot requirement, is what you're saying?
Yeah, it did. And okay. I guess the kids had their feet out a lot in the third one. But Tarantino, honestly, it's funny to see a movie that he has something to do with where the least amount of feet were in his segment and the most amount of feet were in everybody else's. But bottom line for me is this. That part is, if you like Tarantino dialogue and kind of that weird tension everything he does has, where you just know something shitty is going to happen and you just got to kind of wait for it to happen, and it's just kind of this terrible wait and the people in them are terrible people. Like, that's got everything you want. It's short. It's sweet. It's just done. It's there at the end.
I think the reason why it hurt me for the last part was that Tarantino was actually playing a part in the film.
Even in his own films.
Sure.
It was a little bit too distracting for me. I mean, I was definitely the misbehaviors, the Robert Rodriguez thing. Mm-hmm. I thought Antonio Banderas, and I think the kid with the cigarette getting slapped.
That one's my second quote unquote favorite. Again, we're not, none of us are saying this is an experiment that worked particularly well, but
Let's just go ahead and say this is very much like a porn movie. You start out with the ugly actresses at first, and you increasingly every encounter is a more attractive actress, which this movie is a porn, by the way.
Do they do that? Is that a porn thing?
I think it's Southern porn, perhaps.
You finish with your A-list?
Southern porn. Oh, my God. That was awesome.
Porn you get Thank in the you. Carolinas. Is where that gets weird, but no, it's an interesting point.
Randy
though
never makes it past the first lady, so
well point made though that they got rid of the crap first, and I don't know if that was intentional or if they were always going to go ladies first and let her weird ass dumb missing ingredient thing show up first or not, or if that was a late game, like, you know what, guys, we got to get that out of the way because that is garbage and we got to get to the better stuff. It was garbage. Her thing was freaking terrible. It wasn't interesting. There was no reason to even hire Madonna. What are you even doing there?
Well, any of them. I mean, so, all of them are completely embarrassingly used. All four witches. Yeah. I'm sorry. All the witches. I don't know what I'm saying four. But all the witches. And it's just.
Yeah, there were five and then a sixth.
Were there? I would have preferred a movie called Four Witches, but that's beside the point. But right.
I was pulling up to see what else Allison Anders has done. If there's anything that we've seen on this show,
is she the heavily topless one? Is that who that is? Yeah, the name you just gave.
Allison Anders. No, she was the director writer of that first segment.
Oh, okay, got it. Yeah. Sorry, Brian. What?
I was going to say anybody that showed their boobs in that first opening part never went on to do much more.
because Iona Sky plays the one. That needs the ingredient, basically, the swallower.
She's the star. She's the star of this scene.
And other than Say Anything, I mean, she disappeared off the map.
This is insane.
Check her out now, though. She looks like she wants to eat your firstborn. Look at her face. Check out her.
Really?
Yeah. Look at her, like recent photo. Recent photo. That's that lady.
That's what she was trying to do in this movie, too. Eat your firstborn.
Wow. Chew her up for the all-female version of Batman as the Joker.
That's what I'm saying. She got Joker face. Big time.
I disagree. I think Ione Sky has continued to look great. I think Say Anything was a great movie.
Sure was.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
She made it.
Yeah.
But what about her career after then? That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about decrease in attractiveness. I'm talking about how their career went after doing this.
Sure.
Well, why would it go down? I mean, did it coincide with the same time that she's like, oh, all right, I'm in my mid-30s, and that's when all actresses kind of start to lose, you know, people aren't pounding down your door anymore? Or was it? Was there something in this terrible first fourth of this film that made people avoid her like the plague? And I would argue there's possibly something to that, because that is really bad.
Everybody who isn't a superstar has a different path, right? Some people make some money and they relax. They stop trying so hard.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
There's all sorts of possibilities, but it's this first bit is Ione Skye's show to win or lose, and oh, she loses so badly.
Yeah. It's just not uncomfortably bad. You know, it's...
How come Rain Man girl from she was the Italian
Valerie
lady.
Galino?
That's the one. Why? How come she was so quick to Tom Cruise those puppies out in Rain Man?
I know, right? It's funny. And Madonna's shown him in movies before too. So I thought it was kind of funny the ones that decided to keep their tops on.
I had this vibe the entire time that whole first thing's going that told me that Madonna was a giant pain to work with, that none of this was fun for anyone. Mm-hmm. And that she was the biggest pain, that everybody there didn't like her.
I'm guaranteeing you that anybody who's watched this film is not yet rated will see where this is coming from. I guarantee you that a filmmaker like Alison Anders looks at the script for this and goes, okay, I really can't get all these people naked, or I'm not going to be able to get an R rating on this film. So I have to get all subtle and silly and...
Yeah,
and that like that. That's just the way it works. MPAA ruins stuff.
Right.
What was the point in the movie? Was it like shirts versus skins or something, or what was going on exactly?
Right. As a witch, how do you decide if you're going to take it off, take the top off?
Sure. What's coven canon in regards to toplessness? I don't know how that worked, but I like what's her name from 6 Feet Under. Goofy one. I like her a lot. Kind of redhead, sort of ish. The hippie one that was in the hallway and says she packed
Lily,
light.
Oh, Lily Taylor.
Yeah, I like her.
She was. What did she do? She went. She did that.
She was John Cusack's one of his best friends.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Did she do that 13 Ghost thing? Was that her? Is that who I'm thinking of?
No, 13 Ghosts.
I don't think so.
What was 13 Ghosts? Wait,
Matthew Lillard.
She's in
Matthew Lillard.
The new film, The Conjuring, she's in.
That's the one I'm thinking of, yeah. Neither is a horror movie thing.
But I don't see anything as far as like The Haunting she was in 1999.
Maybe that's The Haunting. The Haunting. Okay. That's what I was getting confused with. That's
I think she's adorable, and I would take her anywhere.
I thought she was great in The Haunting. That was, to me, one of her best performances.
I like her a lot.
That's where she took care of her mom.
This Alison Anders lady,
who
did this, really hasn't gotten much else neither.
No, certainly nothing that we've seen before.
We're going to name three different writer-directors for the first three parts of this movie that are sort of obscure. But at the time, it was Tarantino's pulled together with these three up-and-coming auteurs, and this is going to be a really special, amazing film that it's not like anything you've ever seen. And turns out, no, they didn't really hit the nail for any of them.
No, and her movie, most known movie before this, was something called Gas, Food, Lodging, and I have a memory of this being a big deal in like, you know, film festivals at the time or something.
Sure. Right.
92. Since then, though, like... You guys, like nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
No, she did some Sex in the City. No, that's not bad.
It's fine. Look, hey, whatever. Whatever it takes to work in Hollywood, it's great. But there's nothing in here that makes me go, oh, she did an episode of The Mentalist? That thing was badass.
Right. And it's funny because even on her IMDb page, this is the first thing listed as far as the most popular...
Known for. Most popular
things she's done, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Right.
Which is not something I'd want to have... You know, it's almost like it needs to be blaring the first quarter of Four Rooms.
Right.
I think this is less something that she did, and maybe I don't know. Did Tarantino give her like the opportunity, and she just didn't perform, or did he just not give her really a good vehicle to work?
Well,
with?
I don't think this is. I mean, I he's not a producer on this thing. I don't.
Right.
Think.
Right.
I think this is other people talking these people into doing things. And Rodriguez's star was on the rise. He had just finished filming Desperado, which is fantastic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd like the filming of this and that were like a week apart, so you're seeing fresh Banderas from Long Hair and Weird Guitar Gun.
Right. But let's not shove Tarantino to the side. This is a Lawrence Bender film. It's Tarantino's partner. You know, Lawrence Bender produced Reservoir Dogs and then everything after, with the exception of Death Proof. The guy is, Tarantino's right-hand man. this is a Tarantino film, whether or not he was on the set while Allison Anders was filming these girls jumping around.
You can absolutely envision him saying, you know, him having the idea for doing this. All right, I want to do, you know, I want to have four different directors, and I'm going to take the fourth one, and we're going to have it all take place in a hotel, and there's going to be one, you know, lying theme that goes through the whole thing, but I want you to just go crazy, you know, go do whatever you want.
I love it, you're freaking Tarantino.
You just have to talk manic.
Yes.
And you have to bring your hands off to the sides of your chest and kind of wave them around like jazz hands constantly.
Yep.
Right, exactly.
It's the way you finish your L's. That helps a lot too. It's something about the way he says his L's.
Stahl.
Yeah. Everyone loves Tarantino movies, but not everyone loves Tarantino in movies. But it was definitely a truism that him and Rodriguez were dudes that were hanging out all the time. They loved each other's work. They were collaborating on other things. Tarantino was a small and beautifully murdered character in Desperado. And that collaboration would continue, as far as I know, it kind of continues to this day, or at least that friendship does. So they weren't, you know, those weren't two bridges too far from each other. But these other two just felt out of nowhere. You know, Jessica Biel's the wife of one of them, the second film. They're not together anymore, but, you know, that explains that, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. And that one felt less like a... You know, again, you almost look at these separately as, all right, you've got, you know, this first part, which I don't know even how you classify it. But the second piece to me feels like it could have been a comedy drama, half an hour TV show of something.
Yep.
You know,
this
separated
whole thing
out.
Felt like some kind of
like anthology. Yeah. I see what you're saying. Right.
Yeah. I'm fine with the idea that there's this common thread. Like, I get what this is. This isn't all that weird. There are other examples of this, and none I can pop out of my head right now. But I know there are other movies where it's in chunks, and there's this one thread common thing, which is usually like this otherwise nondescript guy, in this case, this bellhop, tie it all together. My bigger problem, larger problem, was most of those do it better when they thread them together or there's crossover of some kind, even if it's just small bits of crossover. This only had Jessica Biel as a crossover over two of them, and the rest of them felt like completely different films. Now, maybe that's what they wanted, but I didn't like the abrupt stylistic change.
It was a peephole anthology where he's basically looking in on these completely different things, and yes, he is a part of them all, but really it could have just been like Monty Python, now for something completely different, you know?
And you don't get something like this with From Dusk Till Dawn. Like, again, that's kind of the similar thing where you've got two distinct directors each kind of taking on a portion of a movie. Right. And that one felt a lot smoother in the transition than these do, even though they're shorter segments. They're all taking place in the same place as opposed to Dusk Till Dawn really changing at that point where you go to the twister.
Yeah.
And
you mean in the first part where they did the titty twister?
Here's a question. I have a question.
Yeah.
What does Scott Fletcher have to say about this?
Shite. Yeah, he might
Scott
have a
Fletcher
thing
talk about this?
Yeah, maybe he does. He explains a little more about what the thing is in the first place. Here it is.
Four rooms. One mad New Year's Eve, an overwhelmed bellboy copes with witches and diabolical children, gets caught in the middle of a sour relationship, and settles a bloody bet for members of a superstar's entourage.
Hold on, what was the relationship?
I don't know.
Yeah, it was Jennifer Beals and her whacked out husband.
Was that what they're referring to? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Were they just gonna leave the Kathy what's her name bits out of it? I hate not Kathy Bates. What's
Kathy
her name?
Griffin.
Kathy Griffin. Can I tell you? This is not about her personally, but there's never been a thing I've seen her portray where I didn't hate it from top to bottom.
Yes,
she can't stand Kathy Griffin.
She has a grating voice, but that's what she's made a whole career out of having that grating shrill voice that she uses. So
I would agree. Yeah. And it's funny because I like Kathy Griffin's stand up. I like her. Yeah. And we used to watch that D-List show, but I can't think of a single thing that I've seen her perform.
What about when she was in Seinfeld? Do you remember that?
She was awful.
She was playing a horrible person that, you know, is basically
like blaming Dolph Lundgren for playing bad action stars. It's just what he does.
No. If you don't like that, there's an inherent distaste for Dolph Lundgren playing bad action stars, then I think they're still the same problem.
And you don't get to above the D list without doing something. Like, she was pretty good in Suddenly Susan. As Brian said, she's a really good stand up comic. Like, I would happily go see her, you know, with Don Rickles in Las Vegas or something. But
you know, I didn't even know there was a D list until Kathy Griffin pointed it. You know what
well,
I mean?
I think she coined the phrase. Yeah. I mean, you consider your A list. You know, you never really get past B list when you're talking about celebrities. Right. And I think it was right. just a joke for her to say. Yeah, okay,
she's
D-list.
In. You know, you think you're on the B list. Hey, look at me. I'm on the D list. But
it's right. in our minds now. It's in our culture. So that says a lot. She's able
she's
to manipulate
pioneer.
The system. She's yeah. able to manipulate the system very well.
Like, it was sure. a good comparison to bring up Jean-Claude Van Damme. And I'm just saying he was okay. He was good at something. He wasn't just right. rubbish all the time, or we wouldn't be talking about him.
Right. But he. But in a way, like. It's interesting. See, he floated. He spent some time A-list, right? Hung around right. the right people, did the right films, and got the right notoriety. But then there'd be just like a little shift to the left. You're like, ooh, that was real shitty. What was that thing I just saw? And then he kind of drifted back a little bit. And then he went way deep into B territory, where he kind of resides still today, if you don't count JCVD and a couple other weird kind of breakout things. Right. And he'll show up in your, you know, your weird Stallone everybody hang out together movies, mm-hmm. but he's, you know, that's just who he is. In the case of Kathy Griffin, I don't think she's ever been on a B list. Really. She's mm-hmm. just, she's just who she but is. She, like, she just shows up
exactly.
and does a thing. Yeah. She's not like she turned
she's
around and made
system.
A, yeah, but she didn't go make a porno on the weekend to make ends meet. Like, she's fine.
That's, oh, you're thinking of Rambo.
Yeah, okay, he didn't he? I forgot about that. Isn't his first film was like a skin flick thing or
yeah,
something?
Yeah. Hey, okay, I got to ask a question. Did you guys? I had never seen this before.
Okay,
you guys?
Yeah, I saw it back in. Oh, I think not theater, but DVD or video or something.
I saw it in the theater and enjoyed parts 3 and 4 enough to get the Laserdisc for cheap. Like when it was in the bargain bin or discount bin, I'm like, oh, you know, I'll right. pick it up. Not the DVD, not the Blu-ray,
no.
but the Laserdisc.
Right. Not the big money. Right.
You know why? Because you can just put the Laserdisc in on side two and watch
right.
the second half of the film. Mm-hmm.
Brian's thinking, I'll buy it on the dying format. I'm not going to buy it on this hot new digital format.
That's right. Well, it's still, God, it's hard to believe the 1995 Laserdisc was still enough of a thing that you could get.
True. Yeah,
that was this was kind of the big deal back then, I thought.
Yeah.
I remember all the hype around it, and I just had in my mind all these years, what was it been like, almost 20 years now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Since this came out?
Yeah.
And I've had it in my mind this entire time that it was this Quentin Tarantino, you know, I knew it was like I knew it was a group of directors that did stuff. But I thought it was very hardcore, serious. I thought it was it was very serious kind of stuff. And when I started watching this, and it was Tim Roth and this weird, you know, this weird soft core porn weirdness, I was like, yeah. what am yeah. I watching?
Yeah, it's not what you think. I mean, even the Tarantino bit is as light Tarantino as you get. In terms of like, just, I don't know. There's nothing really that harsh going on there.
Now, a fun thing with the Tarantino bit is the how infrequently it cuts to a different shot. Like, it's long periods of time with the camera sweeping around and moving. You know, the camera starts in the middle of the living room and then moves mm-hmm. over towards the bar top and then goes around the bar top in one continuous.
So here's the thing.
Shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love those. I love those long takes. I'm watching this movie thinking, God, would they please give me an edit? Like, and I don't understand why. I love long takes.
Yeah. Well, you could even probably pick some Tarantino. He's known for long takes. Yeah. You pick it out of another film and you'd still like it.
Yeah.
Well, what's different here, do you think, then, Randy? Why not here?
I don't know. I think where the movie takes a huge nosedive for me, like where I stop liking anything, is when Antonio Banderas comes on.
Yeah.
And from then on, I'm just picking it apart. Every little thing. I hate every
really?
Little thing
oh,
about the
film. I sat there anticipating, oh, please get to the middle part. Please get to the middle part. And then
here's the deal. In 1995, there were living human beings who thought Antonio Banderas was a good-looking person. In 2013, there's no one alive who thinks that
really?
Antonio Banderas is a good-looking person. And the thing is, I realized watching this, I realized what they all loved so much. 15 and 18 years ago, it was those hair extensions he wore in Desperado. That's what they loved.
They actually
think Antonio Banderas was any good. They just loved his hair.
I'm looking at him right now. Okay, you do a Google image search of Antonio Banderas. Yeah. I don't think there's nothing here that's repulsive to me. I think he's a fine-looking guy.
He's so repulsive in this movie. I just wanted to throw a blanket on the screen.
I think he's suave. He's over the top. He knows how to do over the top, though. But he's playing a very over the top character.
I will give you this. Whoever told him to wear a John Waters mustache pulled one of the greatest pranks ever.
Oh, my gosh. That's a good point. Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm looking at some shots when he was in his 20s. A good looking man.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, even later than that, I'll send you guys a link.
He's a little ruddy, but he's fine. He's, I think he's fine. I think
his IMDb shot, he looks a little bit like E.T., but other than that.
Wait, now I got to look. Hold on. I don't think I looked at that.
I got to see Antonio Banderas E.T. I got to see that.
His eyes aren't shrinking at the rate that the rest of his head is shrinking.
Exactly.
All right, fine. Well, at least it's not a... Now, why is he with Madonna in that first picture?
His IMDb shot, he looks like Mr. Bean. And
he does look like Mr. Bean.
It's very sad. Mr.
Bean. Yeah, Rowan Atkinson for another part of the world.
Antonio Banderas.
Thank you. That was a little racist, though.
No. I was going Mr. Bean.
I know.
Yeah,
I know.
You weren't going like Beaner Darris or something like that.
Oh, thank you, Scott.
That would have been really embarrassing.
Scott, Brian opens the door. Scott throws it.
Okay, real quick, while we're on E.T. Banderas here, favorite thing he ever did for me, easily, Desperado. Thing I liked the least he ever did, Once Upon a Time in Mexico, was terrible. Which I was so excited about. I mean, it was a sequel almost 10 years later, years later. And I was so excited for it. It had all these people in it that I like, bringing Trejo back somehow. I don't know how they brought him back. He died in that first one, but whatever. I was excited. I was ready to go. That movie was freaking hideous. And I can't explain why.
But you'd even put that below all the stuff he's done as Puss in Boots.
Right.
I can't judge it because I've avoided all of it. I've not seen a Shrek with him in it.
Really?
Yeah, I've avoided all that. Oh, wow. Yeah, like the plague.
And the Spy Kids stuff also? You haven't seen that?
I've seen the first Spy Kids, and I guess he's fine. It still wasn't disappointing to me, like Once Upon a Time in Mexico. Mm-hmm. I can't stand Spy Kids era.
I kind of like the Spy Kids stuff, though. I do like the style and the style of filming they used for that. Very, very well cut and kind of animated in its style.
Yeah.
Well, they're making an Expendables 3 and they're loading the freaking guns. It's got Antonio Banderas. It's got Mia Jovovich. They've cast Harrison Ford in Expendables 3. I'm not kidding.
Really? Wow.
Harrison Ford. Wesley Snipes, allegedly. That's a rumor. I don't know if that's
true. They have to film it off U.S. soil because he'll get
arrested. You got to pay the taxes.
That's right, buddy.
Yeah, they always film those movies in strange places. Like the last one was filmed in like Turkey or something.
Wow.
Man.
Don't forget Kelsey Grammer.
Get Kelsey Grammer in there.
Antonio Banderas is going to be in Expendables 3. I'm guessing he's 64, 65.
Let's see. Maybe? He's born in the 1960s. He's not that old.
So he's 53.
He's only 50-something.
Yeah, he's not that old yet.
He looks so old in that picture. That one picture, he's like ancient.
Oh, man. I think he's fine.
Maybe he should get the hair extensions again.
Maybe.
You look as good.
Maybe.
No? Nice one, Yoda. No, none of that stuff really bugged me too much. I just didn't like I like that he's credited as man. I like that. Right. Wife is his wife's name in that segment. But here's my problem with his segment. I'm a Rodriguez fan. I like From Dusk Till Dawn.
Right.
I like most of the things he's ever done.
Did you ever get around to seeing Machete?
No, I haven't seen the Kills one either. I know. I need to. I need to get on those because they're right up my alley, and I really like Danny Trejo, and even the worst crap, I like him in. So I'm down with that. My problem with this is, at one point, a kid is sucking his own feet, and that's disgusting in every way possible. So I cringed like you would not. You would, if you saw me in a chair watching that, you would just see me curl up like a bad chili pepper. It just makes me
really. No pun intended, but did that sour the whole third segment for you?
Kind of did, yeah. Like these kids, there were moments that were great when she's drawing a big bullseye on the wall and ruining that painting, and Like there was a weird rashness to their misbehavior that I really dug on. The kids smoking but still being kind of a doughhead, knowing there's a hooker under the bed because I'd seen this before.
Yeah,
that was all exciting to me. That was his wife, Rodriguez's wife, I believe, by the way.
As the hooker,
hooker in the bed. And it also rang true because I've told you guys that story before. That friend of mine that in Vegas couldn't figure out why their room smelled so weird. And they kept having the hotel check it while he was out at night, and they'd come back and it would be better for a while, and then it would get real bad again. And eventually they had him come out and check it one more time. And the next time they came back, it was all taped off with police tape, and they had found a dead hooker under the bed.
No way.
Yeah,
really?
In the box thing.
How do you not look under the bed?
So, well, I would have, but you can't, because these are the ones that are like nailed down.
Those housekeepers, dude, they do 17 rooms an hour.
Yeah.
They
don't care.
You could have had the hooker in the bathroom and they wouldn't have noticed.
That's why Vegas is gross. It really is gross that way. So when they found that, they couldn't obviously get their room, and they gave him free all kinds of stuff and, you know, chips for the casino because they were trying not to get sued.
What kind of free stuff do you get a hooker in your bedroom?
I don't know, what do you
for some reason, when you just said chips for the casino, I thought of tortilla chips. It took me a long time just now.
That sounds really
good. That'd be nice. Get some dip.
That doesn't sound bad at all to me. But anyway, my point of all of that story was I'd heard that story like 93. Then this movie comes out and they do the same. It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing it the first time going, oh, why do they smell things? Why do they smell things? What are they smelling? Oh, no. Please tell me there's not something dead in that hotel bed. So I'm thinking about this actual thing that I've now built a phobia of because my friend's an ass. Anyway, so all that rang really interesting to me. And then if I found a dead hooker under a bed, guess what I'd do? I would also yell vomit.
I don't want to know what you want to do.
I would yell vomit. I would do like he did, where I just go, laughing my head off at that part. And I laughed again. So, I said, lots to like about that segment, but kids sucking on their feet can't do it, man. Can't do it.
That's funny. It's just a dumb, you know, 10-year-old, 9-year-old thing to do, or however old he was.
Let's say he was 9. I don't care who you are. Your feet are disgusting, dude. Just put those away. Don't put them in your mouth. Like I'm the polar opposite of Tarantino. I don't want no feet near me. Feet are gross.
So can we
feet
have a
are gross? The reason why God has those furthest away from your face.
That's right.
Exactly. I need to understand where we're all coming from here. I need to know what your favorite segment and what your least favorite segment is.
Oh yeah, we never got to that. I like the Tarantino one the best. And Brian, you said, or Dunaway said, the Rodriguez one. Yeah. What'd you say, if you had to pick one?
I would say if I had to say one is my favorite, the Rodriguez bit for the favorite, and with the Tarantino bit, very close second, and the Allison Anders bit, easily the worst.
As far away from your head like your feet it can be.
Yes.
Yeah. Brian, or Randy, so
we're all over the place, because I think The Wrong Man is the best segment.
Really?
I think it's the one where they had a script that was just good enough to get reasonable performances out of everybody. Yeah. It's still ridiculous, but I hate the misbehaviors. I hate it so
really?
Much.
Wow.
And I also, I mean, I hate all of them, but like the misbehaviors is just this, like it, every part of it is just bad to me. I just want to, completely eviscerate it from the film.
It's not good. It's just more, there's an energy to it that's catchy.
Are you saying at least there's boobs in the first segment? Is that what you're saying, Randy?
I didn't call the first one the worst, and I guess I did see this film on like HBO when I was a lot younger.
Yeah,
but it wasn't like I remembered that. I like watching it this time. I didn't remember that it was all titties in the first thing, and I just like it didn't like. it didn't bring back some memories of ooh, I used to love this, you know.
Yeah,
like,
right.
So. But
it's funny though. I mean, because I think the third one is, and I keep bringing up animation. I keep bringing up like, because there is a very cartoony feel about this. Not just the opening credits, but Ted is almost like Roger Rabbit walking through this whole thing.
Yeah.
He might as well be an animated character walking through this live action film. But I think the third segment is almost like a Tom and Jerry cartoon or something along those lines brought to life.
Yeah. I agree.
I think the fact that Ted, I honestly think, though, I think that the third segment in Tim Roth's characters, I think, is the most realistic portrayal of what you would actually do if in that situation. Like, I don't know. In the first situation, I mean, he just it didn't seem convincing. It doesn't right. seem convincing at all.
Especially
that's how
the,
that would go
the special effects going around his head and stuff, all that dumb crap.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But it was like the third one. I mean, he was actually freaking out. He was bouncing off the walls, but he had reason to bounce off the walls. There was actually a real reason to do just that. So yeah.
I don't. My biggest complaint is definitely not Tim Roth. I think he's the best thing in the movie.
I would disagree. I don't think you know throughout the whole film whether he's an idiot, whether right. he's, you know, whether he's just playing it up, or and referring to his character, of course. Like, right. you know, he comes into these situations where it's quite apparent what's going on, and it seems like it takes him half of the quarter of the film to respond to it and understand what's going on.
Well, maybe it's because I have in my head that he is a pervert serial killer. This is the truth. The way I see that movie
the
when I saw it when I first
the
saw it, yeah,
is a pervert strip.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So when I first wow. saw it, there's not this innocence to him for me, or this slapstick kind of old, you know, Charlie Chaplin thing that I think they were probably trying to do. I went into it going, he's a psycho, and any minute now we're going to see it come out. Like something real bad is going to happen. And it never does. He stays true to his Roger Rabbit thing you're talking about, which I totally agree with, by the way. But because I had that going in, I think it colored the way I saw that character. And to me, he's has more depth. I think he's more interesting. I think he's totally crazy and out there. Don't get me wrong. But there's something about the contrast of all that compared to what else is happening that I found interesting. I liked it.
But he has this superficial trope throughout the entire freaking film that drives me freaking crazy. And sometimes it can be funny, and I'm waiting for a trope alert before
oh,
I finish.
Oh, shite. You even said the word and everything.
This thing that he does throughout the movie, and like I say, sometimes I like it. Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. Right. It can be really, really good. But the way he does it, it's like, I didn't want to have to do this, but I swear to freaking God, if this doesn't stop right now, I am going to burn this entire, like, that tranquil fury thing. Mm-hmm. Oh man, sometimes it's great. I can name some other movies where it's great, but in this thing, it's Tim Roth talking through his teeth, and he's just on the edge of blowing fun. The album. Man, drives me crazy.
Do you have a favorite Tim Roth movie if you had to pick one?
Favorite Tim Roth.
Pulp Fiction for you, would you say? Dunaway, what'd you say? Favorite.
Oh, Lie to Me. His performance in Lie to Me was phenomenal.
All right. Brian, Dunaway. Or
I would say Pulp Fiction also. I'm trying to think of what else I really liked him in. Yeah,
I'm going to pick one you're never going to guess. Take a guess what you think my favorite is. He's a bad guy. He's a bad guy in it. I'll say that. No, I don't know if he was in that. He's a bad guy. I'll just tell you. I'm not going to make you guess. Here it is. I think he is amazing in Rob Roy, that movie with Liam Neeson.
Oh,
he's kind of King, what's his name, sort of henchman slash assassin slash psycho. And speaking of, maybe this helped color things for me in this character too, because that is so affecting in that movie. But what a bastard he is in that movie. He is a horrible, horrible human being. And that's how I'll always think of him. I really like
Wildly
him.
Underrated in the Louis Leterrier version of The Incredible Hulk, the 2008 Incredible Hulk.
Oh,
Watch that, man. Edward Norton is the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah. One of the best Hulks.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Tim Roth is the bad guy. You got to watch that movie.
You're totally right. I forgot about that.
That is a good one.
Yeah. I like that Leterrier guy, except Clash of the Titans, which is a steaming pile of shite.
That movie just upsets me because I want to like it. I want to watch it and like it.
I want to love it.
I refuse to watch it because everybody says it's so bad.
You should see it and judge for yourself, but I think it's just absolutely terrible. And isn't it you, Evett, who said the second one was better than the first one, like by a long shot or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe wait for that. Maybe just see that one. But I like Transporter 2. Some people don't, but I do. I like The Incredible Hulk just fine. I thought Clash of the Titans was garbage, and I've never seen Unleashed. So there's that guy's work right there in a nutshell.
Unleashed is is another really underrated thing.
All right. Well,
I recommend that movie.
Check out Lewis and his fine films.
Right now. It used to be in other parts of the world, it's called Danny the Dog.
Oh, very nice.
What is Ski League, the Owl Man? Because this is a made for TV movie, and he played Ski League, or however you say it.
Tim Roth?
It's Tim Roth, right after The Incredible Hulk. Video game, actually. This is a made-for-TV movie.
Skellig.
No
idea.
Skellig the Owl Man.
I like him a lot, though.
After moving with his family into a new home, a boy discovers a bird-like man living in the old garage on his property, played by Tim Roth. Okay, great. I want to see this.
That sounds great. Anyway. The video game they were playing in this movie when he was talking to Kathy Griffin, and it was Betty and her friends that they were stoned or whatever they were doing, playing that Rambo game.
Betty. Mm-hmm.
That is Rambo 3 for the – I did some looking on this. Rambo 3 for the Sega Genesis. However, some machines show her playing Rambo for the Nintendo Entertainment System. So they've got Genesis controllers, and some of the screen stuff is Rambo 3 for the Genesis. And then it would switch and just be straight up Rambo for the NES.
Typical.
That's weird to me. Why wouldn't you just keep the Genesis version running? What are you doing over there? I like stuff like that.
Maybe
some of it was added. Yeah, afterwards, right. Needed some more filler.
But then you always find out, if you really dig, you find out these weird things, like the camera they were using for this shot caused a really funny effect on the screen, and they didn't want to, you know, fake it. Mm-hmm. So they had to change consoles, you know, like the crazy reasons.
Right. Or they just shot that other bit like, all right, well, we have to do some post. Let's just pull up a TV. Anybody got Rambo? Anybody got Nintendo? All right, we'll just videotape some Nintendo Rambo.
No one will know. Plus, these people are stoned. They could be playing. They could be switching. They could have jammed a Nintendo cartridge in that Genesis and made it work if they're stoned enough. This film was originally to be called Five Rooms. Richard Linklater, who we've covered on this show with Dazed and Confused, his film, contributed a segment. However, he withdrew before production began. He pulled out, as the kids say today. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I'm saying there. The fourth room, Quentin Tarantino's Man from Hollywood is based on a short story by Roald Dahl called The Man from the South.
Yes.
Did not know that.
Which was probably the most famous bit on Alfred Hitchcock Presents. Mm-hmm. Which was called The Man from Rio.
Yeah.
And that is what I'm talking about when I say this is just a straight remake. This is a remake of The Man from Rio from Alfred Hitchcock Presents. They reference it, but that doesn't make it any less a remake.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, writing around it too. It's just him writing around a thing. Yeah. Yeah. It makes me wonder if that's how they got him, because he was busy right now.
Now, in all of the other, the original versions of this, I don't know if you've seen it. You know, the Alfred Hitchcock one or the Tales of the Unexpected one or any of those. Does it end, you know, is there the buildup of the suspense of maybe 9 flicks of the lighter?
Right. That's why I think I like this. That's a good question. Did it just have the one false start and everyone lost their finger or whatever the equivalent was in those? Or did they go just like this?
So I recall two versions, and I don't know which was which, but I've seen two different versions of this story where in one, the thing flickers and fails on the last attempt. Right. Mm-hmm. So the first nine are an opportunity for people to tell stories and stuff, and they're talking all throughout the lightings, and then it fails, and then you hear the chop as the, you know, and you don't actually see. You hear the scream.
Hitchcock was a master of suspense. Tarantino is a master at mixing up when the timing is going to happen.
Yeah, so I agree with that.
It just went bam.
And that's why I wonder if that's why I like it, is because they, all those other versions, and I don't know them, so I couldn't say, but if all those other versions got to various states of lighting the lighter the way Ibbot just explained, well, then this is a pretty innovative twist. If nobody thought to do the first one before, then of course he would pounce on this and take it, because that's a really great idea. Right. If that's what happened. If they were all doing it, then who cares?
The thing is, Scott, that really only works if you've seen it and heard this story more than once. Like, you know what I'm saying?
I see what you mean. The value in that is if you've seen the other stuff. You're right.
Right. So it's kind of like when someone says, well, you're not going to understand Iron Man 2 unless you've read that one Golden Age series where the blah, blah, blah. Like, that's not a good movie then. I think it has to stand on its own, and it doesn't for me. It doesn't. Mm. I'm watching this and I've seen the previous versions, and I'm watching this thinking, this is horrible. Yeah. This is not even entertaining me.
I didn't think it was that bad, but I know what you're saying. I see what you're saying. The role originally for Ted, the bellhop, was originally written with Steve Buscemi in mind. So right, I would like to ask that question. How would that have gone over? I think it would have been a very different kind of performance. It would have been way less slapsticky, probably, because I don't ever see him doing that. It would have been a lot of, nobody cares, nobody cares. It would have been more Buscemi.
It would have been more of a put upon, like, oh, God, another thing.
Yeah, dude.
You know, as opposed to.
He would have been great with those kids. You shot me in the face kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Did you guys ever see New York Stories?
No.
No, you didn't. You know why? Because it was a Woody Allen film that he did with Martin Scorsese, Francis Ford Coppola, And it was basically the same idea. You've got an anthology film, and Steve Buscemi was in that. Mm. And he probably said, eh, no thanks.
It was Steve. Nah. It was New York City Stories?
Yeah, New York Stories.
New York Stories. I want to see this.
Yeah, it was a 1999 anthology film, and it's three short stories.
Oh, here it is. 89. It was 89, actually.
Right. What did I say?
Yeah, you said 99. Woody Allen, Francis Ford Coppola, and who was the other one?
Martin Scorsese.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, I bet that's all right.
So this, yeah, this is prior by about 6 years. It did not do well, but it's rated okay.
Larry David's in that. Weird.
Yeah. And Nick Nolte.
Oh, yeah, you're right. There's him, and there's a whole bunch of other people. Yeah. And of course, Mia Farrow was in there because she was in everything that Woody put his hand on. Do you think these work today? Can you do an anthology today? Probably think so. Okay. Yeah. Well, who does our anthology today? Who matters now? See, this is a fun. You know, I like these.
I think TV shows have kind of taken that to where, you know, you get a special guest director. I think, I don't know if you really see it. You don't see it in films much,
I'm playing with it, but Darren Aronofsky.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. Paul Thomas Anderson, or who's the one that, who did Wiener movie?
Wiener movie.
Wiener movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah. One of the guys who have the exact same
There
names.
Will Be Blood guy.
Yeah.
He would be, you
yeah,
put him
Paul
with,
Thomas Anderson,
yeah, yeah, yeah. So yeah. Paul Thomas yeah. Anderson, Darren Aronofsky, those guys are cut from the same
The Coen role. Brothers would do one of the segments.
Oh, yeah, dude. That would be good.
That'd be great. So you could go that direction, which is going to be a little more akin to this, like artsy fartsy and edgy and all that, and get those guys for that. But then I think it'd be fun to do like a mainstream family friendly one, which is like J.J. Abrams. Mm-hmm. who else? Like, you know, like Amazing Stories kind of vibe.
Right.
To it.
Okay. Steven Spielberg. Exactly.
Yeah, get Spielberg or somebody. Oh, I can't think who their younger equivalents are now. Like,
I don't know. I think you do a Wes Anderson.
Put Wes Anderson in there. Have him finish it. All right, I'm down with all this. Who's Honk Gilligan?
No, I said Paul Gilligan.
Oh, who's Paul Gilligan?
Vince Gilligan?
You're thinking of Vince Gilligan.
Vince Gilligan.
Yeah. He doesn't really direct, though, much. I mean, he does some, but yeah. No, I'm into that kind of stuff because this is a throwback, whether anyone notices or even recognizes it from Four Rooms. This is, I mean, it's a throwback to, you know, what's the word? We just said it.
Anthology?
Anthology series, yeah. What's a big one? A Twilight Zone
or Tales from the Dark Side.
Sure, and I'd like to see a science fiction focused effort in that way. I would watch that. I'd be all into that.
Right. There was one a couple of years ago that did just that.
It was a sci-fi thing, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Sci-fi
and
channel,
In a way, there are sci-fi anthologies and things like the X-Files, you know, like I'm waiting for that to get back on TV. And I don't mean Fringe. Fringe does not fit that. That don't you dare say
big,
Fringe.
Big fan of Fringe,
but
are you?
Fringe.
Okay.
But I'm just saying, like, when X-Files was in its heyday, week after week after week, on Sunday night, you'd watch a story that was a good standalone science fiction story. And the intertwining rope between one episode and the next was the characters who were investigating it and trying to figure it out. And I want that so much. Why can't we have that?
That'd be great. Maybe Vince Gilligan's next. He can just give Better Call Saul to somebody else. Let him run off and do that.
There's actually sci-fi announced, or sci-fi announced, horror anthology series from Jamie Foxx coming.
Whoa, Jamie Foxx.
Jamie Foxx. Yeah, I put his name with horror. Like, I connect those two all the time.
All the time. Yeah. Is he going to come out? Like, I want him to come out Crypt Keeper style and come out and say hello and good evening. I want him to do that.
But we're going to look at. We're going to be seeing Robert Zemeckis.
Yeah.
So let's see.
Say no more.
Right? You're done.
But yeah. I remember this Jamie Foxx thing being announced months ago, and I don't think anything is coming of it.
Maybe not. I know that they did another thing where they had, like, it was like Masters of Science Fiction or something.
It was. It was a few years back, and I remember starting watching it, and it was okay. Yeah.
I didn't walk away going, man, this is going to change the world, but it was kind of fun to see these smaller stories. Yeah, I think so too. It was a little too. I don't know. It's hard to explain.
They went big and then had to go home.
Yeah, that's right. They went big and then went home. Bruce Willis not credited in Four Rooms because he violated SAG rules for acting in this film. So no money. That means you can't get paid. He appeared for fun and as a favor to friend Quentin Tarantino. And acting for free violated SAG. And acting for free violated those self-same rules. SAG agreed not to sue if his name was not included in the credits. It's kind of hard not to see him, though. Like,
so, So he violated SAG rules by not being paid for the film,
not doing contracts, not having agent arrange things, like not all your normal crap you do with your SAG card and all that. If you did that, I mean, I don't know why it would. If he has a SAG card and has SAG status, he's part of the Screen Actors Guild. Then who cares? I don't understand why that's violating anything. Because of no money? Oh, that's what it is. He appeared in the movie for no pay. That, I guess, is against the rules.
Right. And that means Brad Pitt couldn't get paid. So
for what?
For the role that they could have given it to some other actor. That
right. I see what you're saying. Oh, because they would have. That's a paying job that they didn't get because unions suck. All right, moving on.
Right. So I got a trope.
Oh, wait. Hold on. It's right here.
Musgrove.
Oh, shoot. Clicked A when
Put
I meant to click Q.
Put it closer to your hands, man.
Oops.
Do you remember when there was an episode of Happy Days where these aliens showed up?
Always. That's one of my favorite things. It was post shark jumping, by the way.
You mean Mork? Yeah. I was going to say, Mork was the alien from Happy Days.
Yeah, he was on there all the time.
Are you talking about
the Dukes of Hazzard when the aliens showed up?
Okay, so you get where I'm going with this. There needs to be a name for a trope where you have an otherwise... a universe that's one way otherwise, but there's this thing that you've stuck in it that makes no sense.
Yeah.
Like, what's that doing there is the trope, I guess.
Yeah.
And in this movie, I didn't realize it till I finished it and looked back. I'm like, wait a minute. There was a freaking magic cauldron.
A porcelain magic cauldron in that room.
Yeah. Well, that's the honeymoon suite. So it's the bathtub that's built into the honeymoon suite to do it in anyway when you're...
But this is otherwise a rundown hotel in old Hollywood, but for some reason there was some magic actually being done in this movie, and it is true
that room before all the witch decorations and stuff go up in it, that room does not look anything like any of the other rooms, which are crappy. Even the penthouse feels like it's got
a
shag carpeting.
Hotels like that gross me out so much. Everything about those rooms grossed me out. All those rooms. Like,
it reminded me of the episode of Benson where Benson gets into a wager with the ghost of death.
Oh, yeah, dude. Those are great. What? See, I remember this. Randy's right.
Right. The freaking Grim Reaper shows up on Benson and plays Trivial Pursuit with Benson.
Yep.
This one episode.
Oh, no.
Yep. It's great.
And you're just this is was otherwise. I was fine with this. I didn't need that.
Yeah.
That completely changes the whole.
No, you're totally right. It's the whole. It is the very definition of jumping the shark. So there's already a term for it. But my point is that we've seen other movies that do this. Now there's an intentional thing to do it. And then there's them doing it because they think it's really a good idea when it wasn't a good idea. So I would say aliens on Dukes of Hazzard, terrible idea. And they went ahead and did it anyway, and it was a bad idea. They weren't knowingly, ironically doing it. This movie, though, you could maybe argue is doing that in the way that Tarantino and Rodriguez did with From Dusk Till Dawn, which was to have this be a bank heist, criminal, crazy person movie, and then have it suddenly turn into a vampire movie. That I feel like that's them doing this on purpose. And knowing that they're doing it, and knowing it's a bad idea, but because they know it's a bad idea, it's a good idea. If you don't, you know what I'm saying?
And I'm not talking about like when the whole point of the thing is to hit you with the big twist, like in The Prestige.
Yeah.
You know, it ends with quite a twist about whether magic is real or not.
Yeah.
Like that, okay, that I get. But this is just like, oh, and by the way, in this otherwise normal universe, there's witches and they do magic and they actually are going to conjure something.
Does it help that they got that out early? And not later.
It actually was like you spend the rest of the movie wondering where the magic's gone.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. The magic could have helped in a couple other scenarios there.
Yeah.
Like magically detect there's a dead lady under your bed. How about that? Right. Or magically tell that kid not to suck his toe, you disgusting little turd.
See, that really bothers
you. Oh, it really got me, dude. I don't like it at all. Let's see. Angela. Oh, I get this is great. So my knowledge of Tarantino's foot thing. It's pretty limited to just stuff you read on the internet. But on IMDb, they literally call out this one thing in the trivia that just says this one line. Angela, played by Jessica Biel, is barefoot throughout the fourth segment, period.
Okay.
That's all it says.
You know, I'll bet you Quentin Tarantino wrote that. Like, you know, it's
but he's doing it in kind of a, is he doing it like in an epiphany kind of way? Like, Angela's barefoot throughout the whole fourth segment?
I just want to make sure you say Jennifer Beals.
What did I say, okay? Beal?
You said Jessica Biel.
Oh, Jessica. Yeah. I always get them
Her
confused.
Name is Jennifer Biel.
Yeah, she's the Flashdance girl, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The one that can, yeah, that sweater. That was a big
deal.
She's
a maniac.
Yeah, she is a maniac. she's very attractive. I think she is lovely. Yeah. Looks great now, too.
She was Betty on The L Word, and that's an underrated TV show.
Also, some episodes of The L Word directed by first segment lady in this movie.
Yes, probably a connection there.
Probably. You know, who am I to say? Let's see what else is going on. We talked about, I wanted to ask about this. So what do you, okay, so Randy used to ask, what do you call that other thing? And we really didn't have an answer for you as far as what to call that insertion of unreality into movies, right, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But what do you call it when movies I used to love when they did this, and I got all excited because I forgot they did it here, but movies that have cartoons for intro credits. Mm.
Oh,
freaking love that. Like Christmas Vacation, the Pink Panther movies did it. Right.
No, but this, you know what? This probably could have been the same guy who did the Christmas Vacation. Now that you say that, the style and
love that stuff, man.
City Slickers.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
They totally did.
Who's another one? Elf.
Elf had it.
Mad World remake that was a few years ago. Rat Race.
Kinda right. Got that. Mm-hmm. Totally good did. One. I love that. They don't do that much anymore.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, like Mrs. Doubtfire had it.
Really?
Yep.
Oh yeah, that's real recent.
I don't remember that.
No, I'm trying. Come on, I'm trying here.
1993.
Last week.
We said Catch Me If You Can. Right?
That was 93. That feels weird to say.
No,
that.
No, we didn't say that one, did we?
Which one?
Catch Me If You Can.
Oh, okay. Well, that's pretty recent.
Better Off Dead is 30 years old.
Hey, just don't do it.
One Hot American. No, that's Wet Hot American Summer. What was the other one that Cusack was in? Something Summer, where he drew the rabbits that would kill each other.
Crazy Summer.
That one. I like that movie.
So that's not. It's a pretty common thing.
I like it. They should do it more. And they should do it with more serious movies, like a Seven-style movie, like some serial killer in it. They ought to have an intro that's all animated. Right. I'd be all into that. Nice. I like that kind of stuff, for whatever it's worth. Let's see. Oh, I wrote about four times about kids licking their feet and smelling their feet and how gross it was.
Yeah, what's up with that?
What'd you say, Brian Dunaway, there?
It says fourth title. Bob Kurtz did the title sequence for Four Rooms.
Oh, who's Bob Kurtz?
That's his name. That's the animator who did the intro.
Who did the Christmas one? Find Christmas Vacation. Let's see if
that's one about, if I'm looking for that.
Yeah, yeah. Because that one's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorites by far. That's also the only Christmas movie I can watch other times of the year and feel good about it. Like, I actually enjoy it off season. See it in the middle of July for no reason.
I can't. I guess the bridge too far.
Oh, here we go.
You can't do it.
These are the ones that Bob Kurtz has done. He's done Max Dugan Returns, 1983, which is like around the corner. 91, City Slickers. Honey, I Blew Up the Kids, 1992. Straight Talk with Dolly Parton. Why haven't we watched that yet? City Slickers 2 again, and Four Rooms, and The Pink Panther would probably be the most recent one from 2006. Remember that one?
With Kevin Kline. Yeah, right.
Right. Der Burger, that one.
Der Burger.
That's animated credits opening. I've never thought about how that's a thing.
I love it as a thing. Mm-hmm. I hope it continues as a thing.
And it's a good way to set up what's going to be happening. You know, Ted is going to have all these problems and things happen to him just from the opening credits.
Yep.
That's
true. I'm going to make a comment here that's probably going to give me a little bit of heat. And this has come up on the show before. Do you guys remember when we watched Running Man, The Running Man? Mm-hmm. With Arnold Schwarzenegger, might be familiar with his work. I had complained that I didn't think it was very nice to make a really old lady drop the F-bomb real loud. Like, it bothered me that they were granny, listen, your line is F off or whatever.
And I argued that with
you. You did argue it with me. So I want you to, are you going to take a similar argument stance when I feel bad when a girl looks straight into the camera and yells the F-bomb as loud as she can? Does that not bother you when little kids are being directed to do that for some reason? Does it bother you? Does it not bother? It bothers me.
I don't know if it really bothers me so much. It depends. It depends on a lot of factors, right?
All right.
Like, so I hated this whole movie.
How much do you care about your kid? Factor one.
Oh my God. I hated this whole movie, but like, I could imagine in a better film where there was a meaning and a purpose behind it.
Yeah.
That I would be like, well, who are you to decline this actor just because she happens to be a child, you know, the opportunity to do what the filmmaker thinks is appropriate here. Like I don't know.
Chills to go naked. Yeah,
well, right. But if you signed up for it, if you signed up for this, then you're in. I get that. But I'm coming at it as, all right, I'm a parent and I'm putting my kid in acting. My kid is going to act. Mm-hmm. And somebody comes along with a role and says, all right, a couple things are going to happen here. Your daughter, who's now 10, she's going to be in Kick-Ass, and she is going to say this litany of horrible things. And there's nothing you can do about it. She's going to drop C words. She's going to drop F words. She's going to put every possible horrible, euphemistic, terrible swear word you ever heard. And she's going to say those as if it's nothing, because that's what makes her character interesting, because she kind of goes against type. She's a little girl, yet somehow she's saying these terrible things. If you signed up for that, then you're in. I got it. No judgment.
I just did the math, and the actress was actually 11. She was 11 years old.
Okay, so let's say she's 11, whatever her name is. I forget her name. She's the Let the Right One In remake.
Yeah.
Carrie. Lana McKissick.
Three names.
I like her. I like her a lot, actually. I think she's good. But the point is, as the parent side of it, it would be – I just would know that I'm sending him into Hollywood, and I already have a bias against Hollywood being a place that just churns people up and spits them out. Like yesterday's, horse poo.
And there's, there's a very different thing there too. Like, you raised your kids in Salt Lake City in Utah, you didn't raise them in Hollywood basically to be actors. And what have they already been exposed to? And what are they already, like, when at 11, they're already starting to write little parts for themselves. What are they putting on paper?
Right.
You know, I don't know. I just, I want to let people who are doing this at least have the liberty to figure it out on their own, even if we can all agree that for the most part they all make huge mistakes.
I just hear a little kid say something and I go, oh, really? You're gonna make that little kid do that? She's a sweet little girl. She doesn't need to have that already. let her cuss all she wants later, and she can make her own damn decisions. That's all.
You know what? I hauled Tristan and a couple of his friends from dinner to their homecoming dance last night, and you should have heard the stuff they were talking about.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Right, but they're 16.
Right, they are 16. Yeah. And I'm not saying I don't know what the statute of limitations is on this. And apparently for me, it's really young or super old.
Yeah.
But to me, it's this piece of innocence that just gets carved out. Like, you're a little kid, and let me have that giant chunk of flesh from you now. And the whole old lady, let me take yours too, because you're here.
And you're doing what we call daughter testing, although you're adding in grandma testing, which is perfectly fine. But the thing about daughter testing anything is you only have whatever you've got, whatever your experience has been. You have your daughters. You have experienced that, right. And they have cousins and stuff. But you don't know what it's like to have had a daughter that you raised in, let's just say, Australia. There's just such different cultural norms and such different familial norms. And the person themselves, as your two daughters are different people, right, with their different parameters at different ages.
Sure.
So I'm just arguing that, you can't help but daughter test it, but daughter testing never works.
Yeah.
It always just reveals something about you, not really anybody else.
Oh, I totally agree. No, so that's the funny thing about this. This is more of a philosophical about why my reaction is that way, not why somebody would choose to do that. It's about how I see it and how I would be like.
Makes Scott cringe.
Well, it just makes me cringe, because I wouldn't let my little kid, because to me, it's gateway drug to other shitty undersides of that town. And this stuff exists and happens. So then, you don't hear the two Coreys talking about how great their upbringing was in Hollywood. Sure, not that they couldn't make some of their own decisions during all of that, but some adults really mistreated those guys.
And to put this back on myself, it's clear that my child is growing up to be a mammoth of a human being. He's going to be huge. And he is going to have to push me down and crawl over my dead body in order to play American football. I just think it is the worst thing a child can do to himself. Like, it's up there with, playing a game where you just take a hammer and hit your head with it. And everybody I knew who played football, organized played football growing up, got horrible injuries, and so many people end up just in bad, bad shape, especially when they get older, because they played this sport. I love football. I love watching football. I love going to football games. I hope my kid loves football. I just don't want him to play it. But man, there is a good chance that there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. He's gonna do it.
And so I've gotta find a way to moderate that as he grows up. And, I see a scene like this and I come away And I don't even really think about it. But if you make me think about it, I think maybe that kid really, really wants to be an actress at this age, really wants to do this kind of thing, this challenging stuff.
Sure. Well, and you as a parent have to make that decision and then own it or whatever. But, you know, if you're like Marky Mark's mom, let's just say, and she's like, you know what I'm doing this weekend, Lydia? I'm going to the local theater and we are going to see my son pull out his big flaccid penis on the screen. I can't freaking wait.
But like he was like 30 at that point.
I know
point.
That. I'm not saying – I'm not – and again, I still think that's awkward for her. Like,
and that was a prosthetic.
I know. Well, I assume so. But it's, to me, it's a very interesting question. I know it comes up on the show sometimes, and as a both a parent and a bystander who likes good movies and understands context when it's used in certain films, I think it's an interesting thing because you don't always think of these people as relatable people. They're just people on the screen, right. And you like the performances or whatever. But you don't ever go, what's it like to be in that first segment? What's it like to be Booby Girl's dad right now? What's that like? I wonder what it's like. And if it's good for him, well, then that's creepy too. You know, like there's all kinds of.
You want him not to enjoy it, but you don't want him to, like, or you want him
you know
to be
what,
okay
exactly.
with it, but not be too okay with
exactly
it.
Exactly what I'm
now
saying.
Now you're just slut shaming, and it's totally.
I'm not slut shaming. She can do whatever she wants, it's not a problem.
It's a discussion for such a better film. Because,
really
seriously,
is.
because this movie stinks so bad, it's really, really easy to just slip into, oh, and here's all the things that made me uncomfortable and that I didn't like. And those, you know, those things are universally bad. No. They're just bad in this movie.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Yeah.
In a much better film, you've got a much easier route to say, okay, that was good in its place. And yeah. I can appreciate that there was an artistic choice made there.
Yeah. I'm just saying exploitation exists. And it can get
right. And absolutely. I mean, let's look at the time difference here. The Little Rascals. If you don't know what that is, look it up on the internet.
Ask your dead
old school black and white old school comedies. Anyway, they used to tell those kids anything to make them cry, and it was absolutely acceptable. They would tell them, you know, their dogs had died to get them to cry on, you know, on screen.
Yeah.
What are they gonna look like in 50 years from now? Are they gonna look back and go, you know, we really screwed
those kids up?
Wasn't Mickey Rooney on that show or on those movies or something? I think Mickey Rooney.
Yeah.
Mickey
Hal
Rooney
Roach.
Was a dude, yeah. And some of those guys
Hal
turned
Roach
out fine.
All kinds of stuff.
And I'm not even saying like those tactics.
You
are
saying Mickey Rooney turned out fine? Is that what you just said?
Well, whatever. He lived to be 90 right. something and still with us. And
he lived to be.
I mean, he's not. You know, he didn't kill himself in a ditch
Success.
Somewhere. I like I said, and Randy's right. Everybody's different. Every single situation's different. Everyone's perspective's different. Like you can't. There is no one size fits all.
What I want to be right about is the point that a better film would have you thinking better of these things.
I agree with that. Yeah, mm-hmm. I do agree with that. I think that's a good point.
This is a horrible film, and man, I just like I want to say like this is like worse than Last Action Hero. Like Last Action Hero is a better movie than this movie.
Sure. Is it like, you know what? He's right.
I love Last Action Hero.
That is a better movie. Well, mm-hmm. I can't believe I'm.
I'd enjoy watching that more than this for sure.
He's got Lannister Grandpa in there with his smiley face contacts on.
That's right.
That guy's great. All right, let's get to some clips. We have. I didn't mean that to go so long with the kid thing, but let's jump to some clips. I got a bunch. And it begins with Madonna making a sacrifice.
To reverse this evil which has been done, I make this offering to the Divine One. A whore not, an innocent was, for whom I seized a virgin's blood.
Oh, gosh, stop it. That was terrible.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, you know, terrible. We haven't talked about, and a little bit of it came up in the clip there, the music.
Oh, right.
In this film. Which was a lot of it by Combustible Edison, a band that this movie introduced me to, and I've bought every album that they've come out with ever since, as well as Esquivel, who is like this lounge jazz performer that inspired music like Combustible Edison.
Oh, wow. Like an older guy from yesteryear.
Like the 60s and 50s, yeah. Mm. And, you know, the kind of swinging, loungy jazz.
But also
really,
slightly
really
creepy
stuff.
And weird. Like it's
kind of, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's always
tiki lounge, kind of music.
Uh-huh.
stuff like that.
Kirk watching ladies in green paint dance.
Sure.
How about this? Oh, I wrote on this one, the label of the clip is, should I even play this? So that'll give you an idea of how bad this clip is.
Here, oh, God.
Go. Goddess, yeah. Diana, I offer to you the jism of the one I wooed for you.
The jism. We don't say that much anymore,
we
do
don't
we?
Anymore. No. We've shortened it.
Yeah. Mm. Apparently Allison Anders says that.
Yeah, she has no problem whipping that out. Let's see. This person is so sorry.
I Theodore. Must humbly and sincerely apologize.
I laughed at that part.
It reminded me of
funnier in audio, actually.
Yeah, it now reminds me of the rundown last week. Get away, monkey!
Oh, yeah.
You go away, right. Monkey.
Heard about that monkey scene,
right?
Something about trust.
Oh, I was just beginning to think I could trust you, Theodore.
Yeah. Had something in his mouth, I think.
I do think that was the best segment. I'm standing by that.
I hated that one.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know.
It didn't go anywhere. It felt so like there was no payoff. It felt like a Saturday Night Live skit with no payoff.
The best part was the guy yakking over the building while he was stuck in the window. I think that was that segment. Right. He was trying to get out or whatever.
He's trying to get out the window.
And he's facing that dude, and the dude Ralphs, and he pulls in just in time. That was pretty good.
That guy, by the way, and I'm trying to figure out, he was on The Sopranos.
The gun guy, yeah.
Yeah, and he was also in The Shawshank Redemption. I'm looking to see who he was.
Somebody's bunkmate or something.
I'm not saying that I did appreciate this, but Brian, you didn't at all appreciate the payoff at the end with the real Theodore showing up.
Oh, it was so, you know.
Too late.
Yeah, too exactly.
Late. A little too late. Too little too late. I don't know.
All right.
I don't like it. Something about maladjusted.
Surrounded by the maladjusted?
Oh, yeah. It's him freaking out. My favorite line in the whole movie.
You heard shit, monkey boy.
There you go.
Yeah, this would have been, boy, the more I think about Steve Buscemi being Ted,
right.
The more I would have loved to see that movie instead.
Yeah, it
would have
been fantastic.
Because the whole thing is angry acting, that character. Mm-hmm. And Steve Buscemi just does it better than
irritating
anybody.
Acting or irritated acting is what it is. Yeah. Something about, I don't know what this is.
I have absolutely no idea.
Well, it's just him freaking out again.
Yeah.
And there's another one.
Behave. Yes, Papa.
Oh, that was the part you hated, isn't it? You didn't like that at all with Antonio Banderas saying anything.
Yeah, pulling the kid's hair and
puss in boots. She sees dead people.
There's a dead body in my bed.
Nonsense, that's just your brother sound asleep.
God, the angry acting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She had a cool enunciation though. Listen to this.
There's a dead body in my bed.
Bed.
Yeah.
I liked it. All right, here's your Tarantino doing something.
I'm on duty, sir. Duty schmooty, come on. It's like Cristal. It's the very best that they make. And I didn't like champagne until I had Cristal, and now I love it.
Jesus. That did me laugh.
Picture him doing it.
I started thinking of all the people that would have entertained me more in that role. And I realized that I was just thinking of everyone, every actor.
Anybody would have.
Yeah.
Why couldn't he have? I know he does this sometimes, but why couldn't he have had somebody else? Why not a different actor than him? What was the point
I just think it's a complete vanity move. It's why he's the brother in From Dusk Till Dawn. It's why he's in Pulp Fiction as the guy who has the house that Jules and Vince come to.
The question is more, why doesn't he see what we see? You know, like, why at some point, why doesn't he go, oh, wait, I could cast Michael Clarke Duncan in this role.
Right.
Yeah, and it would be better than my ability.
Yeah. He's not good. Yeah, he's not. Yeah, I mean, he's a character in a weird way, and you kind of see him and you go, oh, Tarantino, but you don't, there's nothing about any of that where you go, man, the acting in here is amazing and he should do this for everything.
And by the way, if you couldn't do Michael Clarke Duncan nowadays, but Omarosa would have played that role better.
Well, because he did?
Yeah, because he died. Well, he could have done it in 95, I suppose.
Saying Omarosa.
Omarosa, right, I'm in.
She would have been better.
I liked him, and Dusk Till Dawn, I thought he played creepy really well, so I was fine with that. And he drank that foot real well when he was in the bar. That was fine.
Now, see, you know, that brings it up. George Clooney would have been a great character to have, or actor to have, in place of
Perfect.
He could have done the whole, like, all right, now, Ted, I want you to sit down. I'm going to talk to you. For like the whole Ocean's kind of convincing.
Danny, he would have been Danny Ocean in this.
Yeah. Sit down for a minute. Mm-hmm. Give me 60 seconds of your time for this $100 bill.
Yep.
Or even if,
you got Bruce Willis there, pay him and the whole thing's done.
Or even like, even if it has to be overly manic, Clooney from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yes.
No problem.
Sure.
No problem.
Sure. Oh, I've been craving that movie lately, by the way. Love that
casting
movie.
Casting corrections only 20 years too late.
Yeah, I guess so.
You're welcome.
From the future.
Let's see. Oh, and then I captured this by itself.
Duty Schmooty.
Just to play sometimes.
Duty Schmooty.
Duty Schmooty. And then finally, Ted the Bellboy. Whoops, Ted the Bellboy.
Ted the Bellboy. The That's Bellboy sweet. We called about 20, 25 minutes ago.
Ted the Bellboy. Well, my goodness, glad you could make it, son.
Glad I could be here.
side note, production note. It was a lot harder for me to capture a lot of dialogue from this movie because everybody swears all the time. So
yeah, there were 193 uses of the F-bomb in that fourth segment alone, according
the
to the trivia.
Segment. Yeah, yes. So you can see what I was up against. It was either F-bombs or
Duty Schmooty.
Or Duty Schmooty. So.
Yeah, so you're surprised that it came from an 11-year-old girl too?
Not really. Not really, I guess. I don't know. I mean, why not make Spy Kids just have everybody running around calling each other effers and stuff? Why not do that? Now there's your Spy Kids movie.
Because nobody would watch it.
I see. Just like Four Rooms. Okay, moving on. Let's do this. It's the Film Sack Checklist. Somebody in Tarantino's part with bare feet? Check. Tim Roth performing shock vomit? Check. Spend your dumbest segment as early as possible? And check. I got some Star Trek connections as well. Mark Lawrence, who played Sam the Bellhop. He was the old guy at the top. TNG, played Volnoth in the third season Vengeance Factor episode. On DS9, played Carl Zemo in the seventh season episode Bada Bing, Bada Bang. I hate Star Trek episode names that are...
Yeah.
And you see that name and you go, holodeck episode.
Right, exactly.
Every time.
Wonder if there's a mafia on the holodeck, huh?
Oh, let's name our stupid episode after it. All right, Kane Hodder, he was stuntman on DS9, performed stunts as Jem'Hadar guard in the episode What You Leave Behind. And then finally, Alan Marcus, he was a stuntman also in Star Trek VI, performed stunts as crewman Samno. So there you have your Star Trek connections. Sam no, Sam yes. Soundtrack grade, I'd give it an A for appropriate. Felt like it fit what they were trying to do, so I didn't really have a problem with it.
I love that. I think the soundtrack is the best thing about this film. As much as I like The Misbehaviors, I like the soundtrack even more.
Yeah, it's all right. Twitter post, this is where you guys sum it up in 140 characters or less. SS. Can't talk today. 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
Four rooms. Yeah. In room one, dumb pseudo-erotica. Two, a horrible misunderstanding. Three, a dead hooker. Four, drunken dismemberment. So, just like Nerdtacular.
Well done. Dunaway.
Four rooms. Woody Allen lives on this softcore porn anthology that drops more F-bombs than a half dozen Tourette sufferers and a tub full of piranhas and body fluids. Duty Smooty.
I love your punctuation. Well done. And then finally, Brian Ibbett.
Four rooms. A whole fourth of this movie could have been avoided if Ted the Bellhop would have looked at the room numbers on the switchboard he was answering. And a whole half of this movie could have been avoided.
Right?
Nicely said. By the way, that's a good point. But I kind of liked the mix of old school and new school. Like one of them, you could rent a movie. Like they had a movie rental computer system. Mm-hmm. For the kid watching the
on the most archaic looking
I like that. It's like there's a Mad Max quality to all that stuff and like an actual switchboard. What the hell, man? Let's see. We got an email. Oh no, here's our I almost forgot. An alternate title has been chosen. They've just come with it. Right. They've just shown up with it. It's on a piece of paper. This is an and or. First option is Make 'Em Wait, or I Left When Madonna Showed Up. I think that's the one I would go with. Email came to us from Brett Fullington. Fullington? Not Fullerton. Fullington. He says, hey, Sackers, in the one about the rundown, this is last week when Brian Ibbett was trying to say cryogenic chamber. Remember that? I remember that.
Yep.
Scott jokingly said he thought he meant hyperbolic chamber. I instantly laughed out loud because Scott had just inadvertently made a reference to Dragon Ball Z, my favorite anime. Something wrong with him. There is a place called the Hyperbolic Time Chamber, known for the Room of Spirit and Time in Japan. It is a wide expanse of emptiness where if you spend 1 year inside, the time in the outside world only passes 1 day.
Conception.
Yeah, sure. Crazy, right? The gravity inside the chamber is 10 times that of Earth and was used to train by Vegeta, Trunks, Goku, Gohan, and Piccolo. Piccolo. I don't know this stuff. I hate Dragon Ball.
Oh, yeah. Scott doesn't know Dragon Ball at all.
I hate that show. Just wanted to let you know because I'm sure this knowledge will serve you well. Love the show. Thanks, Brett. Well, thank you, Brett.
And as I like to say, you just been nerded.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I've been schooled by that guy. I don't know.
That's the guy who corrected my hyperbaric chamber. Thanks.
Nerd.
I now want to write you guys an email, and why wait? I'll just say it right now. And can I have a late trope alert?
Yeah. So late I have to find it. There it is.
The movie starts with this trope that I love, which is the old guard telling the new guy who's going to experience the rest of the movie, you know, what to expect. Mm-hmm. And one of the things he says in the middle of that is something I have experienced multiple times, and I wonder if any of the rest of you have. So my question for you is, you ever been introduced to something when you were a young man and had the old guy telling you about it say, keep your pecker in your pants?
No.
All the time.
Not once.
Is it a Southern thing, Brian Dunaway?
Absolutely. You got to keep, everybody knows you got to keep your pecker in your pants.
Wow.
If you don't, all kinds of trouble happens.
I thought that was a movie thing. I was never told that into my face. Really? I wish they had. Yeah, I should have kept it in.
We use pecker a lot down here. Anytime you have a...
Well, now, in the movie, they don't use the word pecker. The guy uses a word that begins with the letter C, but I heard that and I just thought, wow, I remember when I was going to work at Schwann's Finer Foods and I was going to have to occasionally make food deliveries, and I was told, you know, like, Schwann's delivery men get hit on a lot, and this phrase, keep your pecker in your pants, was just laid on me right in the middle of, you know, being told about a job I was going to be paid, and I needed to keep my pecker in my pants.
I'm trying to figure out why Schwann's delivery drivers would be in demand or whatever. That's
the one
weird.
We have is not an outstanding looking dude by any stretch of the imagination.
I so envy you that you live where you can get Schwann's.
There's a lot of confusion.
About Schwann's, for sure.
Yeah. I want some cat. No, I'm talking about the chicken.
Schwann's.
Schwann's. Yeah, but all right. Hey, look at this.
I had a feeling it would be Brian Dunaway, who's been instructed to keep his pecker in his pants.
He's still being in. It's a weekly meeting, right?
As a matter of fact, they usually tell me, put that pecker back in your pants.
We actually have to start each session of recording Film Sack by telling them.
That's right. Every Monday at 4, we have a quick meeting.
Well, I realize, Scott, you grew up in Mormontown, but...
I love that you keep going back to this well.
I will bet you it's a part of the instruction for your mission. I'll bet it's in there somewhere.
What is? But keep your pecker in your pants?
It's phrased differently. Come on. It's phrased differently, right?
I don't have any instruction for anything. I don't know what you're talking about. Hold on. Let me go ask three of my wives, and they eat more jello than the rest of the country.
When a young man goes on mission, he gets some rules.
Yes. It's like going into the army, and one of them, however, is not. Keep your pecker in your pants. I don't think that's in there.
Oh, you're murdering me?
Oh, my gosh. All right, what are we doing? Oh, next week, Event Horizon. Guys, Halloween kicks off with our first Halloween-y movie, scary madness in space thing with the other Anderson guy, Paul W. Anderson, right?
Right. Paul W. S. Anderson?
The guy that is not the other guy. Not the
is not right. Wes Anderson.
No.
Too many Paul Andersons.
Too many Andersons, really. All these damn Scandinavians coming over here making good movies. What's going on? Event Horizon was a favorite of mine, 1996 or 7, I think it was. And I loved it, and it scared the hell out of me. And I saw it on DVD, and it scared me again. And here we are this much later, and I will save what I think until next week because I'm not sure it did. I'm not sure it did scare me. But it's still, I decided, though, I was talking to my friend Jason yesterday at a lunch thing, and I brought up that, we're doing that for Film Sack in a week. And he's, oh, that's cool. I love those kind of movies. And we got to talking and I realized that might be my favorite genre of genre film. And that being
horror in space.
Yeah, space, horror, like hard sci-fi, scary space stuff. I love Sunshine. I love the Alien series. I love This Thing. I love Leviathan. I like anything where they're in space and everything goes to hell and lots of people die.
2001 qualifies.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, it's a more methodic, quiet kind of approach to it. But yes, it's the same thing.
Way more shorty shorts.
Sure, it's the same thing. There's something about it. I don't know what it is. And we'll talk at length about that and try to get behind why. But I love it when I hear something like that's coming. It just gets me all excited to know that there's some... You know, somebody else out there is making a movie that is essentially, oh no, we're stranded out here, and then pick everybody off one by one and do some heroic stuff. And I love that. That's great. And Aliens, Aliens is probably textbook for this, but there are many other examples. So it'll be fun to talk about that movie. In the meantime, you guys should email us your favorites and let us know. And to celebrate the beginning of Halloween month for Film Sack, at the end of today's episode, stick around because we have a 7-minute long Scream compilation from every episode we've ever done up to this point.
Awesome.
I should say up to Footloose is the last one where he recorded.
Does that include our screaming or just the actors?
Just the actors, all the clips. Okay. And
no vomit screaming.
No, by
Tim Roth.
And that's a lot of screens, like 7 minutes straight. I want to thank Jack Fox who put this together. And we got some more stuff from him in future episodes, but we'll start with this one. It's 7 straight minutes of every scream we've ever covered on the show. At least with a clip. So maybe some of you are in there. I wonder
what percentage of listeners are going to not make it to the end of this episode.
I don't know. I don't know. But I hope you enjoy it because I know I did when I heard it. And it's awesome. So thanks again, Jack, for that. That's it for us, folks. Visit us on the web, please. That's a place you can go and find things. Filmsack.com is a thing you can find. You can hang out there, find all our links, our show notes, our backlog of old episodes, all that stuff. Email us, filmsack@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook and on the Twitter. On Twitter, we're @FilmSack. Just search for us on Facebook. And you can leave a review for us on iTunes. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Yes, sir.
We'll see you next time.
Duty Schmoody. Duty Schmoody.
I remember now why I did this.
podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.